guys, welcome back to the podcast. I'm Em, and today I'm chatting with Georgia Day.
I learned so many lessons from it, but this is now the next chapter. And how is this going to work for me and my family? And how is this kind of going to enrich my life as opposed to be something that I kind of fight against?
Georgia is a notable UK-based beauty journalist, having worked at the likes of Marie Claire, Glamour, and Elle. She was also previously head of editorial and content at Space NK and is a mom of three. Georgia has now joined Sheerlux as a regular contributor, where she writes on everything from beauty musings to motherhood. Her editorial work has been featured in Vogue, Glamour, Grazia, Marie Claire, Porter's The Edit, and Condé Nast International. We are covering so much on this episode with Georgia, you guys. Her career transitions in journalism to now freelance work, navigating career, identity, and mom life, as well as her beauty, skin, and pregnancy go-tos. So let's get into our chat. Okay, before we get into this episode, I need to tell you guys about my new pregnancy pillow. This was recommended to me by a friend, and now I need to pass along to all of you. Created by highly experienced health professionals in 2013, the BB Hug Me pregnancy pillow is uniquely adjustable and has been designed to relieve pain, offering a 5-point support system throughout pregnancy to the most critical areas: pelvis, lower back, knees, ankles, and abdomen. The pillow shapes around the body, making it easier to relax and get comfortable during pregnancy. Its filling has been specially selected for its antibacterial properties, pressure-relieving function, as well as its ability to keep cool and prevent overheating. My favorite part are the adjustable clips, because you can customize the firmness of the pillow as you see fit. And it comes in stylish colors as well. Go check them out at bbhugme.com, available to ship internationally. Georgia, hi. Welcome to the Big Move podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
We're so excited to have you on today. I feel like this has been a long time coming. We've been prepping and chatting for a few weeks. So we're thrilled to have you on. We're going to dive into things. I guess to set the stage, do you mind giving our audience just a brief rundown on like who you are and what you're all about?
Cool. So I'm Georgia Day, and I'm a beauty journalist who's been in the beauty industry for nearly 20 years. So I have a long standing in the industry, and I've written for tons of titles in my time and worked for some big name brands. And at the moment, I'm currently a columnist for Sheerlux, which is a fashion, beauty, lifestyle publishing platform. And I'm also a mother to three children.
Perfect. Well, we have all of the questions. We're big fans of Sheerlux over here. And also the fact that you're juggling three kids, we need insights. We need to dig in there.
I'll do my best.
Absolutely. So on this podcast, I love to talk about our guests' big moves, those transitions in life that shape our stories, the big moves, whether it's moving cities or a country. You have done so, so much in your career. I can't wait to dive into everything, but is there like a big move or a risk or a career transition that like comes to mind that you kind of want to set the stage with us today?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've had a fair few kind of changes and moves in my time, like I'm sure most people have. I think for me, though, the big move came after I'd had my daughter, and I went back to my job on a magazine. I was working at Elle magazine at the time, and so much in me had kind of shifted. And I think your listeners who have had kids or even have been through kind of significant life events like that will recognize it. It changes everything, obviously, but it changed my perspective so much. And I came back to Elle, which is the job I'd been in for kind of 8 years and which I loved, and we'll go on to talk about it, you know, was such a big part of me and my identity. And there was something just different in me. And I was like, I need to be challenged. I need to do something that doesn't necessarily feel kind of like safe and cozy anymore. I want to, if I'm away from my baby daughter, you know, for 10 hours a day or whatever it is, I want to be doing something that really challenges me. And it coincided with a kind of shift in the team at the time. And I ended up moving from working as a journalist on a magazine to becoming creative director of a beauty communications agency. And at the time, probably doesn't sound a big deal now, but at the time, it was one of the big kind of moves of my sort of colleagues. No one was kind of really doing that. Everyone was, it was very kind of like, we had beauty bloggers coming up, kind of mixing in the space, but no one had kind of really jumped ship and was doing something on the other side, as it were. And so for me, taking on like what was a really new role in the industry at the time was a really daunting move, actually. And especially, I think, if you know, you've had kids, so you know it, you feel really vulnerable, don't you? You come back and you feel really kind of like not sure of your place in the world, or your world at the very least. And so that really, I think, was a big move for me kind of psychologically, but actually it really set the tone for kind of the next couple of changes that I had in my career. And it kind of opened my eyes to working in different parts of the industry that now, you know, have been such valuable moments and formed such a valuable part of my kind of career experience today. So yeah, that's probably my most kind of valuable experience, I reckon.
Wow. I find that really fascinating and also really motivating. You were not only being challenged as a new mother, but yeah. You felt like it was time to also challenge yourself in terms of your career. They both kind of coincided and collided and kind of came at the same time, it seems.
Yeah, they did. And I think it was born out of this feeling that if I'm leaving her, you know, this little tiny being that I've just been immersed in for the last year. And don't get me wrong, I really wanted to go back to work. You know, that's something that I've always wanted to do and it's a personal choice. But I just felt like, okay, if I'm going to leave her and I'm getting on a train every morning and I'm away from her for however long, it's got to be worthwhile. It's got to feel like something that I'm doing, something that I'm really passionate about. And, you know, maybe I'd kind of done my time on magazines and maybe I obviously did. I needed a bit of a new challenge because don't get me wrong, like it was the best experience ever, you know, and it led me to lifelong friends and I had some most amazing experiences, but it was kind of, you know, magazines can be quite cyclical, or they were then. You know, you did the same stories every June issue. You did, relatively speaking, the same stories every September with new season kind of trends and things like that. So, yeah, I guess maybe my perspective has shifted and I just felt like I needed something new to get stuck into that would make me leaving my daughter feel worthwhile, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess to back up, in terms of like your career in traditional journalism, like where did that career really start for you? And did you always have a passion for the journalism side of things?
Yeah. So I've always been obsessed with magazines. So magazines were like, you know, I was the sort of 14, 15 year old that would tear sheets out of magazines and make like binder files with all of these tear sheets and kind of like, I don't really know why, but you know, I just loved to look at pages and I used to rip out shoots and keep stacks of magazines in my room. And so I was always obsessed with magazines. I always loved fashion and beauty. You know, I was always buying makeup and kind of experimenting, had some very dodgy kind of looks to show for it, I'm sure. But yeah, I loved magazines. And I kind of knew that it wasn't necessarily about kind of like I was at university, but I knew my degree didn't necessarily have to be in that world. So I did my degree in kind of theatre and drama, which is something else that I love to do. And then as soon as I left university, I basically applied for work experience. And those were the days before email. So I actually wrote letters to fashion and beauty directors on four different titles that I loved and kind of, yeah, sat back and waited for the reply, kind of crossing fingers and things like that. And I got a reply from one who was Nicola, who was the beauty director from Marie Claire at the time, which was a magazine I'd loved. And she invited me in to kind of come in and meet her for a chat and a coffee. And so I went in and I went up to the desk and I said, oh, hi, I'm here to see Nicola. And anyway, 10 minutes later, Nicola comes down looking really confused, but kind of really lovely and pleased to see me and friendly. And we had a chat. Mm-hmm. And she invited me to do some work experience. And so I went back a couple of weeks later and I did 2 weeks work experience. And then that went really well. And she invited me back to do 6 months. And it kind of turned into this amazing, amazing thing. And we only found out a little bit later on that it was actually Nicole, who was the fashion director at the time, who'd called me and asked me to come in for a chat. And I had thought I'd heard Nicola. And so had gone in asking for Nicola. And Nicola, being the lovely kind of affable person that she was, kind of just went with it and was like, well, we don't really need work experience, but yeah, okay, fine. And meanwhile, Nicole was kind of waiting for her work experience person to show up and they never did. So I guess you could say, yeah, it was kind of a lucky break that I ended up in beauty. But so I was at Marie Claire, yeah, for 6 months. And then I got asked to join the Glamour team. Glamour was a relatively new title in the UK at that time. So it was really exciting. And I joined there and was there for a year. And then I got asked to join the L team. And that for me was kind of like the most exciting thing because L was like the magazine that I'd grown up reading and was like, yeah, a fully formed obsession for me at the time. So
yeah,
I started working at Elle and I was at Elle for 8 years, kind of worked my way up and had the most incredible time there, traveling and seeing amazing places and eating in the best restaurants. And like I said, making amazing friends along the way. And Yes. So that was how I started, with kind of good old fashioned work experience and being in the office and kind of making endless tea and making myself available and, you know, running errands and doing returns and sitting in the fashion cupboard for ages and all of that kind of thing.
So I guess from that experience in particular, were there any like one to two, I guess, like valuable lessons that you've sort of taken with you to what you're doing now? Any interview tips or like career advice in general that sort of like has stuck with you?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's kind of lots of small, obvious ones, you know, like kind of get stuck in, show willing, be enthusiastic, that kind of thing. For me, actually, I learned a lot when I was working in those kind of assistant roles in the early days, actually about managing people, which is something that I didn't kind of get to do myself until like a bit later on. But I realized kind of quite early on from watching people and kind of watching how the relationships work in that kind of environment, just how much of a responsibility you have to the people around you and the people in your team. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, where I am now in terms of my perspective on being a mother and looking after people, I suppose, you know, it's always struck me that when you manage people, you really do have such a duty of care to people. And I think, you know, we spend so much of our time at work. I know post-pandemic, it's maybe a bit different not being in the office, but certainly, you know, before COVID, you probably spend 80% of your time of your life being with your work colleagues, right? And managing people is really hard. It's a really fine art that a lot of people don't get right. And I'm, you know, not saying that I'm perfect, but it was really something that I noticed, that the way that you manage people is so, so important, and the way that you are there for people and are able to show support for the people that you work with and kind of show up and champion people and make coming to work a pleasure every day. I think that's definitely something that I've not had in lots of jobs, and but then I have had it in other jobs. And I think as soon as I became a manager and as soon as I kind of built a team around me, I was acutely aware of making sure that I was in a good mood, even if I wasn't, you know, even if I had no sleep or been up all night with my baby or whatever, you know, or not having a good day for whatever reason, kind of showing up and being a force of positivity for people, because that's how they're spending their day. And it's really important to kind of, you know, I think energy rubs off on people. So yeah, for me, it would be kind of, yeah, learning kind of those people skills and understanding how to behave in that kind of, in that kind of context. And it's something I think is a really useful kind of lifelong skill anyway to learn.
Yeah, absolutely. It's sort of like leaving your personal at the door and like powering through and like putting on your, I hate to say PR face, but right. Like you need to show up and be there for your team. And
yeah, because you know, everybody has hard days and everybody's going through stuff and we're at work so much of the time, and let's try and make it a fun, pleasurable place to be. And, you know, I think I'm really not about kind of workplaces that have politics. I feel like I'm too old and too ugly enough to go through that anymore. You know what I mean? Like I've been there, done that, and it's just not fun. Like life is really hard enough as it is sometimes. You just want, you know, I think it's about showing up and bringing in the good energy and making being at work a fun, pleasurable place to be for the most part.
Yeah, makes so much sense. So I know your career has taken twists and turns. I'd love to sit and talk about your transition to Space NK, because when you and I initially spoke, you mentioned that was the role where you felt like you were at the top of your game. It felt like, you know, you were like really killing it. Talk to us a little bit more about that part of your career and sort of like what was going on there.
So I joined Space NK not that long after I came back from maternity leave from my second child, my son. And so I got this job at Space NK, which was a brand I had kind of idolized since I started buying makeup when I was like 14 or 15. So it was such an exciting opportunity. It was a new role that they had created. And I went in as head of editorial and content. So basically was responsible for creating and shaping not just their kind of in-store offering in terms of tone of voice and content and windows. I did a lot of window shoots for them, but also I created, it's called Inside Space. It's like their global kind of content platform that we rolled out across the US as well and the UK, which is still going. So for me, it really felt like I kind of reached a really, really interesting point in my career. It was something that kind of combined all of my past experience, but it was a new challenge. It was one I was super excited to. And yeah, I came back, like I said, from a maternity leave, obviously feeling vulnerable from being out of the game for a while and had not had a great experience kind of coming back into that position for, you know, reasons we'll talk about later. But and so I was at a time when my kind of confidence was maybe at a bit of a low ebb, and then getting that job was kind of like, oh God, okay, I can do this. And, you know, I am valued and I do have something to bring to the table. And for a brand like that, that was like, you know, pretty much a household name if you're interested in beauty. And yeah, so it was a really, really exciting moment for me. And it was a big challenge. It was really hard work. But I got to kind of build my team and I got to do really interesting things, things I hadn't done before, things I love doing. It was a big deal for me.
Yeah, I love that. And then I guess, can you talk us through the transition from Space NK to what you're doing now, your freelancing, yeah, the catalyst for that? And I guess like any growing pains that kind of came with that time period for you.
Yeah. So I was at Space NK for around 3 years in the end. And like I said, it was an amazing role, but I probably went in, if I'm honest, kind of too hard. And it was basically just became, it was a really amazing job, but it was tough. You know, it was really challenging, long hours, very demanding, very, very fast paced, kind of, you know, as soon as we finished one project, it was on to the next with kind of no time to breathe in between. And I definitely do thrive off stress, and I'm somebody that can kind of roll with the punches for the most part. But I think for me, you know, I had two young kids at home. I don't live in London. I was commuting 4 hours a day. I was working in London 5 days a week. I was kind of getting up before my kids were up and getting home after they went to bed, unless I kind of happened to leave bang on the dot and, you know, ran for the train. And it was basically just doing that job basically was just kind of not sustainable with the kind of lifestyle that I realized made me happy. And, you know, I felt like home was kind of just a place to sleep. And then I'd finish after a really long working week. And, you know, then weekends would be spent desperately trying to kind of catch up on family life, but also be sociable and try and be like a great friend and a great family member and see everybody and, you know, do the washing and all of that kind of thing. And I would kind of get to Sunday night and just feel completely frazzled and like I hadn't even had a chance to kind of breathe. And then we were straight back into it again. And, you know, I think for so long, I was trying to do everything. I was trying to kind of maintain the career at the pace that I'd always kind of had it and been used to. But I was also kind of trying to maintain the kind of family life as it was happening as well. And I really tried for a really long time. You know, I remember going to New York. I was doing a shoot in New York and I went to New York. I think I ended up being there for 18 hours because I was so desperate to get back for my son's second birthday. And I just, I couldn't handle the fact that I was like, maybe going to get back. I think my original flight was going to get back at like midday on his birthday. And I had a fit because I was like, no, I can't. I have to be there when he wakes up. I have to be there, you know? And I meant I like killed myself on this shoot in New York. I didn't sleep for like 48 hours or something. And came back and was probably like a terrible parent to him on his second birthday because I was so exhausted. But
totally.
I was just so trying to kind of do both things. And then, you know, because I felt like I was getting frazzled, I was like, right, I need to carve out some kind of headspace for me. So I ended up starting to work out much more than I had done because I was like, yeah, I need to exercise and I need to kind of get that time for me when I can kind of just think and be a bit more clear. But that meant I ended up kind of, I was getting up at like 4:45 every morning to fit a workout in before work or like doing one after work. And then I'd rush home and like my cortisol would be all spiked and I wouldn't be able to sleep. And so I kind of continued on like that. And it sounds exhausting actually to just kind of talk about it now. And it was kind of exhausting, but I think when you're kind of on autopilot, you just go with it, don't you? If it's your norm, you kind of get on with it. But kind of things started happening. And I think my body was just really telling me like, you can't carry on like this. I was, you know, every time I got a cold, which was all the time, I would get a chest infection. I ended up in hospital for a week with my asthma once. I was getting kind of like rashes from like stress all over my body. I was getting like eye infections, which I never get, you know, I was like, things were kind of starting to fall apart a little bit. And I just, the most important thing, I just didn't feel like I was there enough for my kids. And I just thought, it got to the stage where I was like, what am I doing? Like, what am I doing? Yeah. What am I killing myself for? Like, what is it I'm trying to prove to people or to myself? Or, you know, and I just didn't, it took a while. It kind of brewed for a long time until it got to a head one day. And I was just like, I don't think I want to be doing this. I don't want to look back and think I sacrificed all of those precious times with my children and, you know, even just doing the school run and stuff like that, like for a job. And it was hard for me to say that because the job was so bound up in me. But I remember a friend of mine actually who has a daughter who's about 18 months older than my daughter. And she said to me, you know, George, you think that your kids need you when you're when they're younger, which they obviously do, you know, for the fundamentals and, you know, nappies and feeding and sleeping and that kind of thing. But she said, but I promise you, it's they need you more the older they get. And I remember when my daughter was tiny thinking, well, that doesn't make sense. Like, but it, you know, at that time when I was at Space NK and working so hard, like I realized my daughter was like, all she wanted to do with me at the end of the day was kind of sit in bed and debrief on her day, you know, and she was getting to that age where she was having kind of friendship issues and like things happening in class or like problems with her homework and stuff. And I was missing out on being able to have those kind of chats with her. And actually that's what's important, you know, and it kind of, yeah, it took a little while for me to kind of get things moving and realize that I needed to make a change. But I needed to try and find kind of like a happier medium that wasn't quite so extreme on both ends, I think. So ultimately, I handed my notice in and decided to go freelance as a solution to try and kind of find more balance, I suppose.
Makes sense. And yeah, I mean, there's so much there. It's like listening to you. Your day sounded exhausting and right. You're trying to come home and like be the friend, the wife, like all of the above. It feels like things kind of came push to shove for you in so many ways.
Yeah.
And you're also not the first guest to say like that your kids need you more as you get older. And I think that's like a harsh reality for a lot of young moms. I'm going to raise my hand right there because I have a 2-year-old and I'm like, oh, we're out of the baby stage. Like this is getting easier. But in so many ways, like you're so right. That makes so much sense. Like they do, they need you. They want to, then they're communicating and speaking with you and they want to tell you all the things and they want your attention.
Like, you know, looking to see your face in the school play or on sports day. And, you know, it would break my heart because I couldn't be there because I couldn't get the time off or like I had a really important shoot or something and I felt pressure to kind of be there. And yeah, it's those things that really, really matter to them and matter to you as well, to me. But it's hard. I never really realized, I think I took for granted that, yeah, like you say, once you're out of the kind of intense baby phase, that it would be kind of plain sailing in terms of like mothering, but actually it's different. It's hard. It's different. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And so this segues really nicely into my next question about the challenges that come with figuring out your identity as a career woman, as a mom. And, you know, when you and I initially spoke, we talked about, you know, how you feel such a strong identity in your career. Admittedly, I feel the same. And we do work in industries that align with our passion. So I feel like I'm constantly thinking about work and new ideas and things that I want to do more of and guests for the podcast. And like the wheels are always spinning.
Yeah.
So can you kind of talk about your experience with this and like some of the biggest challenges that have come along with trying to balance this?
I mean, you know, for me, I've always loved my job and I feel incredibly lucky to be able to say that because I'm aware that not everybody kind of feels the same way. And before I had kids, you know, I had the best time. I was traveling, I was meeting amazing people, you know, meeting makeup artists and models and really amazing, interesting people that I've been reading about in magazines since I was young, you know, young. And I was doing all of these amazing things. And, you know, I was Georgia from Elle and I had an amazing group of friends in the industry and I was doing all of this stuff. And you know, I loved being a part of my industry and I found my work really interesting, right? So whenever I met people and they were interested in beauty, I was like, I love talking about it. I love, you know, passing on tips or like, you know, having shared experiences and bonding over kind of our favorite beauty products and all of this kind of thing. So yeah, my work, like you said, was most definitely my passion and still is a passion of mine. But I think I was not prepared for how much having a baby would kind of rock my sense of identity. Sorry about my dog barking. I wasn't prepared for how much it would kind of change my sense of identity. And I think as well, what probably didn't help is it coincided with, you know, going on maternity leave. It coincided with moving out of London. So we moved out of London and we moved to a new house to be closer to my family for kind of support. But it meant that I was suddenly kind of like on my own in a town where I had no friends and I had a new baby. And I had my family close by for support, which was amazing. But yeah, I didn't really know anybody else. And I was coming from kind of like this big, being in London, a really busy, crazy, hectic, fun social life and work life, and kind of suddenly with a new baby. And I was like, and you know what it's like, I'm sure if you've ever been to baby groups, you know, I would kind of trot along to these baby groups, and it's only, you're kind of losing your sense of identity is only compounded by the fact that no one ever calls you by your name. So I was never Georgia, I was Edie's mum. Yes. You know, it's like, oh, Edie's mum, nice to see you today. And I was kind of sitting there being like, hi. But actually I was like, well, I have a name and I am a person and I'm maybe an interesting person. And, you know, like, let's talk about stuff other than like how much our babies are sleeping. And, mm-hmm. you know, don't get me wrong. Like, I was totally invested in all of that, but it was like, yeah, it was hard to suddenly go from that to just kind of just being so-and-so's mother. It was hard. I think it felt like everything I'd done up to that point kind of didn't really exist anymore. And so that was a kind of a learning curve and trying to kind of find myself back again after that and kind of figure out what I wanted and what I was about and that kind of thing. But I think the other thing that I think is worth mentioning that's kind of a learning curve is for me is maternity leave. And I think actually, and I'm sure, you know, if you've had guests who are parents on before, like, I think it's something that we don't really talk about. And I think it's a really tricky issue. And mm-hmm. I definitely know people that have kind of put off having children because they are worried about like navigating what that means for their career and like going off and is my job going to be safe when I come back and that kind of thing. And, mm-hmm. you know, I had two not great experiences on maternity leave and just the way that they were kind of managed and how I was kind of managed back into the role. And I think it definitely put me off having my third baby until recently. And I was in a position where that wasn't a problem. But I just think, you know, it, like I said before, like to come back and your confidence is kind of low anyway. And then maternity leave just throws you under a bus, you know, or it can do. It did in my experience. And that for me was really hard. So that was again kind of bound up in my identity and like coming back to a job that you think is kind of like yours and stable and secure. And then actually to find that it isn't, like, that was a big learning curve for me for sure.
Totally. And it probably for you too, as your career has taken so many different like transitions and you have three kids now, I'm sure each maternity has been so different because yeah. when you're at a corporate job in the UK, you can get up to 12 months. It may or may not yeah. be paid the entire time. I've had friends yeah. in different situations. My American friends back home get, you know, if they're working at a corporate company, 3 months and they're back to it.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you've also, as a freelancer, then it's on the complete opposite side of the spectrum. It's like, how much time do you realistically take and then create those boundaries? That's hard. Like, I feel like there's so many different sides to it.
It's so hard, you know, and that's the one thing, like I just turned 40. So I was 29 when I got pregnant with my first child and just 30 when I had her. So the sort of, that's a big time span in between then. But like with my first two kids, I had over a year off and I was, you know, fully kind of like immersed in it and it was great. Yeah. And, you know, with my third, I kind of haven't really taken any maternity leave, which kills me because, mm-hmm. you know, I think, oh, like poor baby, like he's not getting the same experience with me. And, you know, mm-hmm. we haven't been to one play group and, you know, I haven't had him weighed since he got signed off from the midwife and all those things. But, you know, ultimately that comes with me being freelance. And I think, you know, freelance life has given me so much to be grateful for that, you know, I guess there does have to be some kind of payoff. And at least I'm not having to jump on a train at 7 a.m. to leave him. You know, I'm leaving him with my mom or my husband or whatever while I kind of work around it. So yeah, it could definitely be worse. But yeah, you're right. It's a whole other thing to kind of work around. And I can't imagine kind of, you know, I am grateful that with my first two, I got those good chunks of time off with them because that was invaluable.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess sort of like rounding out this section, is there like a biggest lesson that you learned in terms of being a working mom, or like a tip of advice that you would want to offer other moms?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it was just, I would just say kind of check in with yourself and listen to your kind of inner voice. And like, you know, I think certainly for me, like, I really tried so hard to kind of have it all. And I don't even really know what that means, but mm-hmm. I really tried for so long to kind of do everything, you know, be the working woman, be an amazing wife, be an amazing mm-hmm. mother and that kind of thing. And I definitely suffered in all of those areas in trying to be perfect. And I just kind of, you know, we've touched upon it, but I guess like listening to your inner voice and thinking actually what's going to make you happy, you know, and for me, ultimately it was being able to spend kind of cherished time with my children and being able to do the school run, you know, and doing those things that really meant so much, being there for my daughter for chats at the end of the day. And I just think like what I actually realized by the end of it, which was really invaluable, was just because I kind of couldn't manage to do it all, it doesn't mm-hmm. negate any of the hard work or any of the achievements that I've had in the past. It doesn't negate my career up until that point. You know, if anything, kind of, I gave it a really good go. And, you know, recognizing that and recognizing, I think for me, yeah, like compartmentalizing my career has helped, you know. So yes, that was that time and that was amazing and it was great mm-hmm. while it lasted and I learned so many lessons from it. But this is now the next chapter. And how is this going to work for me and my family? And how is this kind of going to enrich my life as opposed to be something that I kind of fight against? So yeah, and I, you know, and recognizing that actually I hadn't failed at trying to give it a go. I'd given it a really good go and it didn't work out kind of thing. So I think also just not being too hard on yourself.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, don't beat yourself up about it. You can only do what you can do.
Yeah. Love that. I think it's practical, sustainable, and like very realistic advice. So thank you. I guess shifting gears a little bit, talking about all things Sheerlux, our beauty favorites, pregnancy, skin, all of that jazz. Sheerlux is a platform that I've gotten to know through the years being here in the UK, working on just different collaborations and getting to know the team. It's been amazing. Can you give us like a little refresher on like who Sheerlux is, like who their audience is and like what they're all about?
Yeah. So I think Sheerlux started like a few years ago and it was originally like a directory of kind of online, fashion and beauty kind of retailers. And then since then, Georgie and the team have kind of, it's evolved into this amazing, I guess, destination. I mean, I think they talk about it in terms of being like your friend in the know, the one with the coolest kind of tips and products to try and new interiors finds. And, you know, they always unearth the coolest fashion brands that you might not have heard of. And that, but they'll also kind of, you know, pick out the coolest pieces from Zara. And like, it's just a really amazing mix of kind of accessible fashion, beauty, lifestyle, travel tips. And yeah, and it's, I think in terms of its audience, like, I think that's so clever and that's part of kind of how clever they've been and what they've done is speaking to different audiences. You know, they've broadened their horizons so much in terms of the audience they cater to. They have Lux Girl now, they have SL Man, they have the Gold Edition, which is for a more mature audience. They have the Parenting Edition. So, mm-hmm. you know, their offering has got really broad because they've recognized that, you know, there are so many different kind of types of consumer out there and people are looking for slightly different things. But all the while with this kind of like very Sheerlux kind of, yeah, like I said, like finding the cool stuff, the interesting stuff, like yeah. peer-to-peer recommendations and things like that. So yeah, it's, you know, I started writing for them about a year ago and it's been amazing. It's been really fun to kind of add my voice to the pack.
Yeah, totally. So any like memorable or like most popular pieces that kind of come to mind when it comes
yeah,
to
Yeah, I think my DMs kind of blew up when I wrote about a piece about how to look less tired, because I think that's something we can all relate to, right?
So yes, yes, please.
Yeah, like I am tired and I know I'm tired, but how can I look yeah. less tired? So that was a good one.
Totally.
And then the other one that I got a lot of feedback on was the products that I couldn't get through pregnancy without, which I wrote for the Parenting Edition. Yes. So like my tips and tricks on how I survived my pregnancies. and things like that. Yeah, I got a lot of feedback on that one as well.
Okay, cool. I want to break that one down with you because I saw your feature recently and I will be in the one in July. I saw some Amazing. Parallels between the two of us. So what were some of your like pregnancy products, like can't live without kind of thing?
Yeah. So I don't know if you had this, but I mean, I had loads basically to start with, but my one kind of like overriding pregnancy experience that I had with all of my kids was I got the most insanely hot feet during my pregnancies, and I have no idea why or what it means or what that says about my anatomy, but it was like every night I would go to bed, even in the depths of winter, I would go to bed and my feet would feel like they were on fire. Like it was just the weirdest thing. In the daytime, they were absolutely fine. And it was, yeah. So anyway, so that was kind of a feature of all of my pregnancies. So I had this kind of, by the time the third one came around, I had this like routine down pat of like things I needed to survive the night with like feet that felt like they were on fire. I think I mentioned it in my column. So one of them was the Elemis Instant Cooling Gel, yes. which is basically this most amazing kind of menthol concoction. It's this gel and I kept it in the fridge and I would just literally like smother myself in that, like head, like tips of my toes to the tops of my thighs. And it would just I kind of went overboard on it. I got through so many tubes of that stuff. And it would kind of just like hit you and the tingling would kind of just be a bit crazy, but it really worked. And then there was this Bloom and Blossom like cooling leg spritz that I would layer on over the top of the gel that really helped. And then probably my most glamorous piece of kit were these ice pack socks that I found on Amazon. And they were these really awful looking kind of like booties that come with these freezer ice packs, and you put the packs in the freezer. And then when they're frozen, you stuff them on top of the sock and underneath the sock. And I would go to bed wearing these socks with these ice packs in, and it would just cool my feet down, and it was like heaven. So those were kind of my most used pregnancy products. But the other one to mention is Demamiel, do a beautiful Demamiel, pregnancy yeah. facial oil.
Okay,
and
cool.
I used that in all three of my pregnancies and loved that product. It's kind of specially blended for really confused kind of hormonal skin, and it just really, really helped me.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I think the other one I wanted to add that's been like amazing for my pregnancy is Mama Mio.
Yes.
Use that one too.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that range.
Yeah. I've been reaching for them in my second pregnancy. And what's nice is like they're designed for pre and postpartum and breastfeeding,
yeah.
specifically for moms. Okay. The pregnancy boob tube. That was the one. It's funny. Admittedly, I found it through Khloe Kardashian. She was using it before she had True, and just like for hydration and stretch marks and that kind of thing. And then their tummy rub for stretch marks. So
yeah, that's a great product. And I love their, I think it's their butter. I think it's their belly butter or something as well. It's a really great product. It's I think it's slightly richer. But yeah, my skin on my body kind of like dried out loads in pregnancy. So I was definitely finding I was reaching for kind of all the hydration and all the kind of products that would help make me feel a bit quenched. So that was another good one that I loved.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about pregnancy skincare a little bit because I feel like it is a minefield. Like it's hard to know, like, should we be going completely clean? I feel like it's all about finding the balance, but like, what did you find happened, I guess, in terms of your skin? Like I find with the girl hormones versus the boy, it was very different. Like I had that glow with Parker, whereas I'm pregnant with a girl now and I had the breakouts and the oily T-zone.
Yeah.
And so that's like brand new for me.
Yeah. Cause we talked about that, didn't we, when we first chatted, and it's crazy. Like I'm not necessarily one of these people that subscribes to like, you know, superstitions and old wives' tales in pregnancy. And if you're carrying this way, it means you're carrying a boy or whatever, or if you, you know, your skin breaks out. But I have to say, like my skin with my sons, I've got two boys, was glowing. And my skin with my firstborn, who was my daughter, was awful, like awful. And going from someone who'd never really had skin issues before to suddenly having basically like acne, was really like, that was really, really hard. I found that really hard. So yeah, I guess with pregnancy skincare, it is a minefield and it is really confusing. I kind of feel like it's maybe made to be more confusing than it needs to be, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Like there's a lot of kind of scaremongering and you shouldn't use this and never touch that and that kind of thing. And I would say, you know, I would say for me as well with skin, don't be afraid to ask for help. Like when I was pregnant with my daughter, I think there's so much fear when you're pregnant that you're, mm-hmm. you feel like you can't have a moan about stuff, right? Because you should be feeling like, I should be really enjoying this and I should be glowing and I should be really grateful. And of course you are all of those things. But, you know, when I had really, really bad skin, I was like, I need some help because I don't know what to do about this. And I remember I went to see Dr. Sam Bunting, who's a dermatologist in London, mm-hmm. and she was amazing. And I was like, why did I wait so long to go and see her? I think I saw her like right towards the end of my third trimester. And I wish I'd seen her earlier because she kind of was so helpful. She was really calm. She was really like clear about what I should use and shouldn't use. She gave me a prescription for something and my skin was like cleared up straight away. And it was amazing. So I think like, you know, getting some really sound advice from somebody yes. who's an expert is a really sensible kind of first step. And yeah, I think like another thing I would say is like making sure if beauty is your thing and if self-care and well-being is your thing, like making sure that you prioritize some time for yourself, especially like I'm sure you're feeling if it's your second baby or your third baby and you've already got mm-hmm. another running around to look after. Like I think as women, we put ourselves so far down on the priority list, don't we? And never more so than when we're running around looking after another little one or something. And, you know, it is so important if beauty is your jam to take care of yourself and find those moments where you can just switch off, relax, like maybe have a face mask, run a bath, go and get your nails done, like actually mm-hmm. take a pause and take a little time for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I'm also totally on your wavelength of like, reach out to your dermatologist, your doctor, or find an aesthetics or someone on Instagram that you follow that's a skin expert and just yeah. DM them and ask them. Yeah. That's what I did. I had Pamela Marshall on this podcast years ago. She's a huge skin guru and yeah. aesthetics expert here in the UK, and she specializes in acne prone skin. So I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to bug her. Like she's probably busy. I messaged her and straight away, because I told her about the oily T-zone. She was like, you need to go on Amazon and get Clinisoothe. It's like yeah. a skin purifier and it's great for acne prone skin. And yeah. it's basically like a toner. It's yeah. like 15 or 20 pounds. And I'm so happy I did that because at least like I started to figure out like a few products I needed to add into the regime, yeah. some to maybe take out.
You just need a steer in the right direction because like you said, it can yeah. feel so overwhelming and like, help, I don't know what to do, and feel like you literally just kind of chucking your old routine in the bin and where do I start from? What do I do now kind of thing?
Yeah.
So yeah, exactly. I think getting that expert steer on just kind of like, okay, like let's not stress about it. This is what you need to do and it's going to be okay kind of thing yeah. is really important.
Totally. So to talk on beauty for a hot second, you're obviously quite the beauty guru yourself. And you kind of told me that like beauty was sort of an emotional crutch for you as a new mom. So I'd love to like expand on that a little bit with you.
Yeah. So I think, you know, like what we've kind of talked about, I think I really struggled for a little while when I had my first baby with kind of like feeling like, who am I and where do I fit in and what's my role now? And kind of that kind of thing. And I remember going to taking Edie to a baby massage class, and it was kind of in like, it was in January in the UK, which if you live in the UK, you'll know is really gray and drab for the most part. It was in like an old church hall. It was like really kind of depressing. It was in this group. I didn't know anyone, but I was like getting out there and trying to kind of do something. And I just kind of was in there and it was like, yeah, I just was like, oh my God, I hate this. This is awful. I don't know anyone. I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, no one's interested in talking to me, like blah, blah, blah. I just felt really kind of like invisible. And I paid for this course. And so I had to go back the next week because I didn't want to waste the money and blah, blah, blah. And anyway, so I went back and I was like, I really don't want to go. I really don't want to go. Anyway, I kind of like had a little pep talk with myself and I was like, do you know what? I'm going to go and I'm going to put some lipstick on. And I went to this baby massage class with like the brightest, boldest red lipstick that I had in my bag. And I was like, do you know what? That has made me feel so much better. Like it was an instant mood lifter. Probably I got a million funny looks at me because it was like, who is this like woman in this baby massage class in a church hall in the middle of nowhere, like in the sticks wearing bright red lipstick. But I was like, I don't care. It kind of like helped me rediscover like a small piece of myself. And it helped me feel kind of a bit more like, yeah, it's okay. I've got this. It's fine. Like, I can do this. Like, it kind of made me feel a bit more like my old self. And, you know, I think even like little things like that, like a slick of kind of lipstick can actually be really powerful in kind of helping kind of give you a kick up the bum if you need it, or be a mood lifter, or kind of help you find your way back to your old self and that kind of thing. So yeah, for me, that really helped.
I love that. And I also just feel like, especially in post-COVID life, like we're sort of getting back to that, you know, putting a little makeup on, putting a swipe of lipstick on. I feel like for so long we were really not doing that. It makes a big difference. So
it really does. It really does. For me, like, I know when I take the time, like I probably think, oh, I can't be bothered to wear makeup today. Like, it's fine. I'm just doing the school run. But actually making a tiny bit of effort, It does, for me anyway, it really has an impact on how I feel about myself. Like, it's like, for me, I've talked a lot about fake tan in my Sheer Luxe column. Like, for me, putting on a layer of fake tan before I go to bed, even if it's just on the bits that people can see, right? Like on my face and my arms and my feet or something, it makes such a big difference to how I feel the next day. I just feel a bit more pulled together. I just feel a bit kind of a bit more glowing, a bit more like, you know, it's totally psychological, but it really helps me. So I just think you do what you can. If that helps you and it makes you feel better and it makes you feel a little bit more in control or a bit more confident, then, you know, those things are really important actually. And I think so often people dismiss beauty as being fluffy and kind of unimportant and being kind of, kind of an indulgence. But actually, you know, we know working in this industry, it's really important. And certainly over lockdown, I think, you know, self-care is one of the things that kind of got people through a lot of it, to be honest with you. And I think, you know, that's not something to be sniffed at.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a nice reminder. So I love to ask my mom guests, especially moms of multiples, like, can you offer one to two like tangible tips for juggling multiple kids and your career? Like, how do we stay sane?
Yeah. So I think, like I said before, don't beat yourself up about it. Like, you can only do what you can do. And, you know, I think the other thing is don't compare yourself to other people. And that's really, really hard to do, you know, especially in like this kind of Instagram social media era. But like, just because somebody else appears to be doing it all, like, they're invariably not, or, you know, they're maybe getting a lot of help that you don't have. Like, I don't have a nanny, I don't have childcare. And so for me, it's just not possible to kind of like do every single thing. It's just not my reality. So like, yeah, don't beat yourself up about what is your reality. Like, if there's only so much you can do, then that's all you can do. And I think, you know, I think that's a really important lesson, is not to compare yourself to other people and just do what works for you and what works for your family. Because actually, ultimately, like, especially, you know, worrying about like what life you're giving your kids or what experience your kids are having, like, all they really want is you, right? They want you to be there. They want to like feel your, they want to feel like you're spending time with them, and they want to feel like they're loved and safe and cared for. So, you know, it doesn't matter that you maybe aren't going on amazing holidays, or like you're not working and doing all of these amazing experiences. Like, ultimately, you've got to do what works for you, I think, and your family.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Well, we're down to our last and final question, Georgia. This has been such a fun convo. You've offered so much amazing advice for women, working women with careers. But is there a last tip of advice in general that you want to leave us with? It can be anything, you know, career related, work, personal, anything.
I think for me, and I think a lot of people will probably resonate, this will resonate with them, like, learning to say no has been a really big thing for me. Putting boundaries in place has been a really, really big thing. So I think it's probably innate in women in general to be kind of people pleasers. I just kind of think that's probably part of our makeup. But for me, definitely, as an individual, like, I'm very much a people pleaser, and I always have been. Like, I hate letting people down. I will always kind of like go the extra mile to help out and get things done and offer my services, offer my help, whatever, like be a shoulder to cry on. And that's definitely like a part of my personality that I love, but actually also it sometimes comes at the detriment of my own kind of mental health and my own family time. And I think as soon as I really kind of realized, actually, I need to stop saying yes to everything. Ironically, it was a time when I was going freelance when I kind of started putting that into practice more, probably at the time when I should have been saying yes to every opportunity. But it was actually when I went freelance, I really actually was like, do you know what? I'm going to say no to things whether it's because I don't want to do them, you know, because mm-hmm. I know it'll give me sleepless nights and I'll just wish I had never said yes, or whether it kind of impedes or infringes upon family life or precious time to me or whatever it might be. Like, learning to say no and putting boundaries in place has been absolutely invaluable to me in the last kind of 2 years of my working life and my family life. And, you know, I don't know what I thought would happen if I said no to things. I think there's always the worry that you'll be seen less, or you won't be kind of as valued, or, you know, you might get forgotten about, or maybe that the world would end. I don't know. I think I thought the world would end if I said no to some things. But yeah. Actually, I've learned that if you do push back, people are really respectful of that for the most part, yeah. You know, and people are fine with that. And like, even something as simple as being like, saying, you know what, I'm not available for a Zoom call at that time, but how about we do this time? Like, right. I was scared to even say stuff like that because I thought, well, they'd just go and find someone else, or like they would forget mm-hmm. about me. But actually people are like, yeah, sure. Okay. Just let us know what works for you. And it took me so long and so many years of kind of bending over backwards and kind of killing myself, and actually just realizing it's really, really empowering to say no and to set boundaries. And, you know, yeah. Whether that's making sure that 5:30 on the dot, you shut your laptop if you're working from home, and you shut the door on your study or your home office, and that's that for the night. And then the rest of the time is family time, whatever it might be, you know, whether it's, for me, one of my things now is like doing the school run is a non-negotiable for me. And so even if people are like, can we do a Zoom call at 8:30, or can you come into London for a kind mm-hmm. of a launch in the morning? For the most part, unless it's something I really, really, really want to do, my answer will always be no, because for me, years of missing doing my kids' school run means it's something that actually I really, really prioritize now. I really want to do it. And, you know, people are like, oh, well, your husband works from home, can't he do the school run? And I'm like, no, we do it together. And that's the moment in my day that I really, really enjoy. It's a moment mm-hmm. where I get to talk to my husband. You know, we walk back from the school run and that's when we have our kind of chat and our debrief ahead of the day. And being able to do that and see my kids at the beginning of the day and the end of the day like that, that is one of the things that I will not negotiate on anymore. And, you know, yeah. I think being able to say no is a really important part of kind of being able to say yes to the good stuff as well.
Yeah. I love that. I think so many people will be able to relate to that. And also it sounds like you do it in such a way that's kind and gracious. And so we don't need to feel right. We don't need to feel badly about it. So yeah, I think that's just a great tip. So thank you so much. Georgia, what's next for you? Is there anything exciting that you want to share with us today? Anything coming up?
Well, my next big thing on a personal level is I'm taking a holiday for the first time in 3 years. I'm looking forward to a month away from everything and having some precious family time. And then lots more stuff with Sheerlux coming up, lots more columns, lots more to look forward to, some more broadcasting with them and doing some of more of the Sheerlux show and things like that. But yes, it's always busy. It's always busy in my world. So yeah, just lots more of the same really to come.
Exciting. Well, enjoy your holiday.
Thank
well
you.
Deserved. And where can everybody follow you, find you, keep up with you, and find you on Sheerlux?
I have a monthly column on Sheerlux, and then I also contribute to features every month as well. And then I'm also on Instagram at Georgia L Day.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Georgia. We loved
thank
having you.
You
today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Of course. And thank you guys so much for listening. If you found value from this episode, please share it with a friend. Tag us on Instagram at The Big Move Podcast and at Monday_Network. We love to hear your feedback, and we will catch you next time.